Hi there. Welcome to The Preventable, the podcast giving you a seat at the table with conversations about the intersection of alcohol, drugs, and mental health in everyday lives. Take a seat and join us.
Welcome to The Preventable. With me today is somebody who I am just meeting for the first time in person, but I feel like we've crossed paths enough via email and networking and all the things. But I'm really excited that he's here in studio today. Alden Lolich, he is the chair of the Bosnian Opioid Project. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you have been at this work, and by this work, I mean raising awareness, providing education about opioids and substance use disorder in the Bosnian community. You've been at this work since how long?
I would say going back about 3 or 4 years.
3 or 4 years.
At least, yes.
Okay.
Kind of actively 3 or 4 years.
And in that period of time, you've accomplished a lot.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. That was my goal initially.
So let's kind of rewind
sure,
and start
sure.
from the beginning. So we have many people who listen to this who are from St. Louis, but there are a fair number of people who are not.
Okay.
And I think if you are from St. Louis or you live in St. Louis, you know that the Bosnian community is a very strong one here in St. Louis. And at one point in time, I don't know if it's still the case, we had like the largest number of Bosnians outside of
Bosnia.
Yeah, right. Is that still the case? Do you have any idea?
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe so. I know going back, because I've been in St. Louis for a little over 20 years myself. And at that point, it was 60 to 70 to 100,000, anywhere between 70, 80 to 100,000.
Now, why is that? Why? I mean, why St. Louis?
I don't know. I mean, I believe it's because of the kind of strategic, not say strategically placed, but there was what was available to, immigrants, but refugees.
Yes.
Because we are refugees of war back in the 90s, what happened back home. So I really, St. Louis was one of the options, one of the settlements that was offered as part of the program. My family specifically came here because I had family here before us, my father's side of family, his sister, so my aunt, and it was easy. And then everybody's like, yeah, there's this small community out there. It's like at home.
Yeah.
You know, we got Bosnian stores, we got Bosnian bars, restaurants, etc. And That was kind of what the deciding factor was right there.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense that it's only grown, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
if there's a conflict and people need to leave,
yes.
and there is one or two people, or you have a city that is welcoming and saying, like, yes, come here. We will support you and we will do our very best. We're not going to be perfect, but we'll do our very best. Then you have some people come over and find it's okay, and then more keep coming.
Yeah, it was definitely easier to settle in St. Louis because of job market was pretty good at that time, and most of the people coming in where they had, not say promised work, but there were individuals that already work at factories or companies. They say, yeah, you know, as soon as you arrive, you know, I'll be able to put you in touch with some management, etc. So some of the promise, and then also it's easier when there's someone.
Oh, sure.
Familiar face,
social
support network. Just like every other community, we tend to stick together and help each other out. And that's what, just without question, everybody chose St. Louis. So that was, I believe, early 2000, that was the case. And then later on, between 2000 and 2005, good number of Bosnians moved from other cities too. Like,
yeah.
I know many people that moved in from out east, who were out in different parts of East Coast, and then just figured it was easier to be closer to the community, And I know it was a lot easier, for example, for, you know, parents, for like the older group of the Bosnian, like my parents, that they could go to a store and they could find an individual who speaks Bosnian,
That's
a bank,
right.
work, and anywhere they went, they could find individuals, you know, Bosnian speaking workers.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly helpful people speak the language, understand the culture,
yes.
particular nuances and traditions and. And that, I think, is really why your project has become so so successful is because you are a messenger delivering a message in a language, and I don't mean like the actual language, but just in a way that the people that you're talking to can understand.
Sure.
You know, it's like why with our peer programming for teens, we love to teach teens how to talk to other teens, because as cool as I am, a teenager is way cooler than I am, right? And the message will be received. So to have you as a member of the Bosnian community actually being able to talk about tough stuff, I'm assuming makes it more palatable.
Yeah, it's like every other community. Communities tend to stick together in general, and it's as an, let's say, as an outsider for someone to come into the community, like penetrate into the community, and to offer any help. Sometimes it's not the easiest case, and anyone just tends to be able more open to someone that. To a familiar face.
Absolutely. I mean, walls can
know.
Go up.
Yeah.
But that makes sense, right? We all do that. We all do that.
Yeah.
So are there, and I don't mean to ask you to speak on behalf of every single Bosnian person in St. Louis, but are there particular, I say that and then I'm like, but, I'm going to ask a question anyway. Are there particular challenges that face the Bosnian community in St. Louis that might be idiosyncratic or particularly challenging for the Bosnian community?
Yeah. Well, at first, Bosnians are known as hard workers.
Yes, is true.
Bosnians are known for that. And then it was since day one, the parents had to get to work, whether that was factories where some of them went back to school, or whether some worked at various businesses, construction a lot, trucking being on road, and that kind of, let's say, caused the children to be more independent in a way, but less control, less oversight over it, and that was it was one of the challenges that parents had to face, because unless you had, like, I was lucky. My family was lucky because I have siblings, and my parents were around at that time. My mom still is. I don't have any kids, but my sister does and my brother does. And it was easier for both of them because we all,
if
you're
together.
Available, you go get one of the kids from school. You know, if you're around at that time, we all were on the list to do that. But not many parents have that availability, so they have to trust their teenagers to, you know, take care of themselves in a way, you know, to, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and so on, to, you know, get home from school and so on, and hoping that they won't get in any trouble along the way. And that was one of the challenges. The next challenge was not knowing where to go for resources. And it was mainly access-based challenges. Language-based challenges. Access. Not much was translated into Bosnian back then. And we, I worked with your organization over the last couple of years. We have translated many documents into Bosnian, and I've seen ads around the city, which is great.
Yes.
It was part of the awareness and program. So at first, it was. I think kind of started from, because Bosnians are considered as Caucasians, and there was the fact that it was almost like we in the community knew that there's an issue, but nobody else did,
right?
Unless we spoke about it.
Yep.
And
you were kind of lumped in.
We were lumped in the larger group, and therefore it's kind of almost like kind of lost along the way.
Yep.
And that was one of the challenges that we faced as a community. And when it comes to statistics in general, I had individuals come to me and ask me, well, what is the number of deaths, or what's the number of issues? How many? It was always hard to say because it was not broken into whether, you know, what ethnicity someone is. It was never broken to that type of data, but it was just kind of lumped to that.
Yeah, I'd imagine it would be very hard to get data. I think I think society as a whole is trying to do better, but there's a lot of room for improvement,
yes,
right?
Definitely.
So a question that I have, and something that is even odd, and this doesn't have anything to do with people of Bosnian descent, mm-hmm. but, you know, even like overdose deaths, I mean, you're the way that we capture the data is where the death occurs.
Correct.
Right? Not actually where the person is from. Yeah. And it's based on
kind of geographic area.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that there's just nuanced ways of capturing data that we have to do better. And I don't know what that answer is, but I feel you when you're talking about how difficult it is to ascertain the real number. Yeah. So my question to you is, I mean, I have a lot, but so you're working now in the Bosnian Opioid Project. You're chairing this. We're going to dig into what that is in a minute.
Sure.
But do you ever find resentment from people that are like, where the heck were you 10 years ago?
A little bit, but...
Or how am I supposed to trust you now?
Yeah.
Or, well, you're here, but what about all these other people that aren't here?
Sure. You know, the one biggest challenge that I've faced during this was the stigma and the one thing that no one wants to talk about.
Mm. That's
any community in general. So it's almost like the stigma, like I don't want anyone to know about it. I don't want my neighbor or another family member or friends to know that my son or daughter is on drugs. What can we do to kind of hush it away?
Yeah.
And then when it really struck me, it was a few years ago. I was getting ready for a presentation at local 110, the labor union.
Great organization.
Mm-hmm. They are very instrumental in all this as well. And I've texted one of the presidents of the Bosnian mosque and to ask, because I figure they should have at least a number of deaths that occurred. Because I'm only at that point. I only knew maybe 5-6 on top of my head deaths that occurred in communion when I started getting involved in all this. So I'm asking, well, can you give me a number? You know, what for the last 5 years? He said 7 or 8. So I said, okay. So I go 7 or 8 in the last 5 years. He's like, no, 7 or 8 a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, what do you mean? Well, how come, you know, it's not, it's not known that's the issue is that deep, right? And he said, well, it all comes down to families, whether they want to kind of announce in a way or not. We have, various platforms when somebody dies, it's posted some, you know, individual, a picture, name, what they died of, and what the cause of that is, if they are willing to do that. And if not, then to us as a community, is not known what the cause of that is. And there were cases that even after that, at that point, their parents would say stuff like, you know, it's my daughter or son took too much cough syrup. Instead of really admitting, and I always encourage them, well, it's okay to talk about it. You know, even at this point, we're not admitting that was the case.
Yeah.
So I would say the data was not collected in a way that it should have from the very beginning, and so therefore it was very hard for me to, you know, have an idea, you know, how big the issue, how big the problem is, and that was always down. It was always up to the families.
And I'd imagine that that's a huge part of what you do with this project.
Correct.
Is drawing attention to the fact that, yes, this is a real issue. Yes, it's okay to talk about. So you're trying to, I'm imagining, reduce stigma.
Yes.
Also provide education and create a network or a community where it's okay to talk about these things and it's okay to seek help.
Sure.
Right? And
sure.
It doesn't make you weak or it doesn't make you less than.
Yeah.
It's just makes you human.
Yeah. Yeah. I even as a individual, I always focused on being proactive instead of reactive. Mm-hmm. And let's get in front of it, and instead of wait for things to happen.
That's
it. And it's you know, at some point we can prevent that. But if, you know, we can't wait when it's too late, and that's when unfortunately, that's when everybody seeks help.
You know, it's what's interesting to me is we serve kids in schools, right? And particularly in certain areas where there's a large number of Bosnian residents, I mean, half of the class is Bosnian.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
if you just do a scan of the room to your earlier point, they're all white.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of, you know, differences in that classroom.
Yeah.
And so the kids at school are getting that upstream, you know, universal prevention about coping strategies and, you know, handling their feelings and talking to grownups that they trust. And then what's interesting to me is then they're going home and maybe that vocabulary about how to really talk through those things didn't exist.
Yeah.
And that's really one of the things that you're bringing to the table.
That's true, because I always feel like that the older generation, like the generation of my parents, were I would say tougher than you know my generation and the newer parents these days. I have a feeling that the newer parents are more open and more, can I say, friendly in a way. But my parents' generation before that were a little tougher, and they didn't always have the best ways talking to us. It was always, not say fear-driven, but...
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you.
It's always
Mother, I'm not shaking my head, I promise.
Yeah, so that may be some of that comes from there, too. But it's, yeah, and I, you know, any chance I had, even I've asked my sister to have her sons and my nephews, and, you know, even luckily I said, we never had any of these issues. We said it's okay to know this stuff.
You know,
it's okay to get educated.
It's
and if they do come in touch or they do get exposed to it, then let's talk about it. And let's not criticize them about it like too much.
Absolutely.
Let's have an open dialogue and let's see what the issues and find the best way to approach that and to instead of shaming them.
Translate all of our talking kits into Bosnian. So we have them in Bosnian and Spanish. We have a lot more, you know, languages that we'd like to work into. But you were really the person who said, like, let me help you. Let me do this so that we can have these conversations beginning, you know, in kindergarten.
Yeah.
So that when there is an issue, if there is one, then we've been doing this all along.
Yes.
So, okay. Give me one thing you're like super excited about at the project right now.
Well, I just recently started a Facebook Live. And I kind of wanted to do that a while back, but I never had a good reason for it. And I'm not much of a camera person myself. But since COVID, as bad it is with COVID, what happened and, you know, everything, you know, all the individuals that suffer from it, but it has really taught us to be able to rely, you know, remote stuff,
absolutely.
Cameras and Zooms, et cetera. So
I have to embrace technology.
Let's embrace it. Let's get in front of it. And then I figured maybe people will be more prone, more open to, because out of comfort of their own homes, they could maybe sit and listen to it. I just had last week my first one, and I think within a couple of days, I had over 1,000 views.
And
I was pretty excited about that, because that was almost kind of a testing, level of testing for me to see, you know, what this can, you know, how far they can go. And it kind of gave me a little extra energy to continue doing it, because, you know, after a while, it gets tiring, because I'm volunteering all my time doing this, just basically it's strictly volunteering basis. So I don't get nothing out of it except hoping that I can help someone. Just like everybody else, I'm busy myself, and everything I do, it's in my spare time. It gets exhausting at times. Especially when I'm not getting a lot of feedback from the people that I'm hoping. So
I have to tell you, your ears should be ringing all the time at Prevent Ed, because your ears should be ringing because we talk about you all the time at Prevent Ed. As a person who is doing this in their spare time, no one has a lot of it these days, but you're doing something in your spare time other people besides us are noticing. You were mentioned in a very comprehensive St. Louis County plan that was released today, and people are noticing.
Okay.
And so thank you for being here today. Uh-huh. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for sort of grabbing us by the lapels and saying, like, pay attention. I think that the work you're doing for Bosnian community, but also just in the substance use field, is absolutely life changing.
Yeah, so I mean, just as a disclaimer, because I'm not a medical professional myself. I'm not a counselor. I'm not a doctor. So
me neither.
I don't know much about it, but I do know that there's a problem in my community, and I'm going to do everything I can, and to bring awareness and education to the community. That's my goal.
You are an inspiration, sir. If you want to learn more about the Bosnian Opioid Project, you can find all of the information on our website, and we'll connect you with Bosnian Opioid Project. And if you want to just keep finding out more, keep listening to this conversation, please consider rating, reviewing, and subscribing to The Preventable. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for joining us at The Preventable, brought to you ad-free by PreventEd. PreventEd works to reduce or prevent the harms of alcohol and other drug use through education, intervention, and advocacy. Please visit their website at PreventEd.org. Like what you heard? Rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date with what we are serving on The Preventable.